Hi, it's Philip Galanis, New York Times columnist, and I'm sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. With me right now is Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri. How close?
Pretty good. 99%, I would say.
See, we're getting better. He is a staff writer for Vice's Motherboard Vertical, and he is one of the only reporters who's actually spoken with the hacker who calls himself Guccifer 2.0. Yesterday, at a news conference in Doral, Florida, Donald Trump said, quote, "Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 missing emails." And he continues to say, quote, "I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press," close quote. This obviously is a little fraught, given that we're in the midst of a heated presidential campaign, especially as more and more security experts believe that Russia is behind the hack of the DNC, with the implication that the Russian government is attempting to embarrass the DNC. Jake Sullivan, who is Hillary Clinton's chief foreign policy advisor, responded by saying, quote, "This has to be the first time that a major presidential candidate has actively encouraged a foreign power to conduct espionage against his political opponent," close quote. We still don't have the full story behind this hack, but there is one person who has a much better perspective than the rest of us, and he is sitting here with me today, Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri, staff writer at Motherboard, the tech and culture channel at Vice. You managed an exclusive interview with Guccifer 2.0, the alleged hacker who committed the actual DNC hack. I'm very pleased to speak with you. Lorenzo, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So let's start with the name, because it's just so good. What does Guccifer 2.0 mean?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So I'm not. So the name comes from, it's inspired by another hacker who is pretty famous. His main claim to fame was to hack into the emails of George W. Bush, H.W. Bush.
And the naked self-portraits that W. painted. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the hacker we owe the pleasure to have. We would have seen those paintings without him, basically. And he is a Romanian hacker, the original Guccifer, and he's actually sitting in a U.S. jail now, awaiting trial after being extradited. So the thinking here was that this new hacker basically tried to, he's saying that he's like the heir to the original Guccifer.
2.0.
Yeah.
New and improved.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Going to end up in prison, presumably.
Presumably. He's also using the same rhetoric against the quote-unquote Illuminati and like other kind of conspiracy theories like that.
I say his, and I've invited you to say his, but we actually don't know. It could be just as easily be a woman.
Yeah, it could
right?
be a woman. It could be a group. He claims to be a man, at least when he spoke to me. And to be honest, I believe that at least at this point, a month after the initial appearance, I think we can safely say that it's controlled by a group.
A group. How did you get this scoop? How did you convince him to speak to you? This group to speak to you?
Well, it was actually like pretty easy. So this was a month ago. As you said, like the DNC just basically come out publicly accusing Russia of hacking them, and the security firm CrowdStrike also corroborated the accusation, saying this was Russia, and more specifically the FSB and the GRU, which are the two intelligence agencies in Russia. And a day later, this individual comes online, creates a WordPress blog and a Twitter account and says, you guys are all wrong. It was actually me. It wasn't Russia. It was just a lone hacker, and it's me. And so I was, you know, I just thought, well, let's try to see if he wants to talk. And I sent him a message on Twitter. Honestly, I thought he wouldn't talk. You know, I thought that he had no, you know, no motive, no, I thought he wouldn't have anything to gain by talking to me. So I just sent the message really thinking that nothing would come out of it. And, but all of a sudden he did answer and he was like, sure, yeah, let's talk. And I was like, okay. So I started asking questions. And I mean, the main issue, the main thing I wanted to know was, are you really Russian? And why did you do this? And how did you do this? And
hold on 1 second. Were you ever, first, very basic thing, how did you speak with him? Were you on a telephone? Was it on like a, was it a keyboard chat? Was it a, by email? I mean, how does one chat with a hacker?
Yeah, in this case, we just chatted via Twitter, in, you know, within Twitter messages, private messages on Twitter. I did offer, you know, and I was like, you know, if you want to talk in any other kind of way, just let me know. But he was like, no, I think we can just talk here.
Were you ever, while you're exchanging the private messages, were you ever thinking, hang on, I wonder if I'm really talking to Guccifer at all, or if I'm just talking to someone who's pretending to be him?
I think, well, I didn't really think about that, but I think it's because I'm just used to talking to people. You know, I cover hacking and hackers all the time, and that's just my default mindset. You know, when someone says, here I am X or Y, I'm just always skeptical, and, you know, I assume that they're not really who they say they are.
Were you and your colleagues ever able to verify that you were talking to Guccifer?
Yes. Well, so, you know, like, we can't obviously know who exactly was behind the, you know, the keyboard, but we know that it's the same person that claimed the hack publicly on his WordPress blog, because he linked his Twitter account on the blog.
Understood. Okay, yeah. Got it. Now, I want to go back 1 second to something that you'd said earlier. You were talking about an organization called CrowdStrike, and they explain exact how they figure in. I know that they're very important in terms of pointing the finger at Russia and Russian government agencies. But who is CrowdStrike?
So CrowdStrike is it's a security firm founded by a few former government employees. And they were the company that got called in when the DNC first discovered that they had been breached. So they got called in and basically, you know, they were asked, can you look into this and tell us what happened and help us get these hackers out of our networks? And so they looked into it and they found signs, or, well, let's say, breadcrumbs or a little, some evidence pointing to the fact that the hackers that had broken in were Russian.
Got it. Was CrowdStrike able to figure out how long a period this hack had been going on for?
Yes. So CrowdStrike identified two groups of hackers. The first one broke in, I think, last summer or late last summer, and the second one in April. And it was the second one that tipped off the DNC IT staff and essentially, like, you know, busted the whole operation.
It's so amazing. I feel like I should just tell everyone who's I've ever sent a nasty email about, just call them up and apologize right now, because everyone's going to know everything I've ever written anyway. Do you think the DNC, is it possible when you're hacked to know how much has been hacked, or do you just know that you have, do you just know that your system has been breached?
I think that there are some ways that you can sort of like reconstruct what data was accessed, and it all depends how good you were at like monitoring your own stuff, right? It's basically like, think about it as if someone breaks into your apartment and you're not sure where your jewelry even was, how can you tell if they took it, right?
Right.
So I think that I'm not sure in this case how much the DNC knows was taken, and I don't even know if there is a good way to find that out. But, you know, essentially, I think at that point you have to assume, especially if you're really convinced that this is Russian intelligence, you have to assume that they took everything.
Yeah. It's very scary. We get to this little point in the story that I find kind of intriguing. Is he Russian? Is he Romanian? you started speaking with him in Romanian and then switched to Russian, or you started speaking in Russian and switched to Romanian? Remind me which it was.
Yeah, well, we started in English, and then at a certain point, you know, when he claimed that he was Romanian, I figured, well, let's see if it's true. And I just, you know, got Google Translate and asked a couple of questions in Romanian. Obviously, I have no idea of Romanian. But, you know, the point was to see how good his Romanian was. And he answered, you know, to his credit, he did answer in Romanian. It took him a little while. And, you know, to be honest, actually, all the answers took a little while. He wasn't very responsive. It wasn't like the quickest chat. But
how was the English? I mean, when you started with, did you switch over because his proficiency was terrible, or because you were just trying to pin him down, you know, in terms of country of origin?
His English was okay. It wasn't amazing, but it was, you know, standard, like, English that anyone that doesn't have English as his first language could use. But, you know, I just thought, like, well, let's ask him a question in Romanian, see how he reacts. And he did answer in Romanian. But, you know, when we showed the full transcript to a few Romanians, I think more than half a dozen, every and each one of them, you know, right away said, this is definitely not a native Romanian speaker. This Romanian is really, like, full of mistakes. He's using constructions that, you know, make no sense. So, you know, it just didn't add up. And also, at that point, you know, I was, like, checking his transcript while also talking to him. And at that point, I was like, well, let's see if he can speak a little bit more, because his answers were very short.
Right.
So I was like, can you tell me how you did this step by step in Romanian? And at that point, he sort of got, I imagine he got nervous, and he said, no, like, you know, we are wasting my time. I already told you
that.
Yeah,
he got hostile with you.
Yeah, he essentially, you know, he did the online equivalent of standing up and leaving the interview room or something like that.
Ripping off the microphone. I'm speaking with Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri. He is a staff writer for Vice's Motherboard channel, and he's one of the only reporters who has actually spoken with the hacker, who calls himself Guccifer 2.0. We'll hear more after a break. I'm Philip Galanis, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Hi, it's Philip Galanis in for Leonard Lopate, and speaking with Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri about the DNC hack. It's a very interesting story. Does he ever say Guccifer 2.0? Does he ever say why he targeted the DNC? As opposed to the RNC?
Yeah, I asked him that, and his answer was pretty, like, I thought it was a little lame. He essentially said, you know, because at this point of the story, everyone was sort of assuming that this was because Russia wanted to favor Donald Trump and, you know, get him to be president, essentially, somehow. And his answer was just like, no, you know, like, that's totally false. I don't care about Donald Trump. I don't care about Bernie Sanders. I don't care about Hillary Clinton. I just want to expose the Illuminati and the Lizard conspiracy theory or something like that. To me, it felt like he just came up with the first,
the first thing he thought of.
Yeah.
Does he specifically deny, when he's chatting with you, any affiliation with Russia?
Yeah, he did. He actually said, I hate being attributed to Russia. I'm not Russian and I hate Russians or something like that.
Did he say why he hated Russia or Russians?
No, yeah, he didn't. But he said that just, you know, he doesn't like the Russia and he's Romanian and everyone is like full of crap for saying that he's Russian.
It's funny. In his very, very bad Romanian, he hates Russian.
Yeah.
I'm very much a computer tech neophyte. If you don't think you can do this for relatively silly people, just say it, and I'll move on to another subject. But how do you hack something? How do you get into an organization like the DNC? Was the DNC's security really lame, or could are we all vulnerable?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I mean, there's multiple ways to hack people or computers. I think in this case, the general assumption, or everyone sort of believes, that the DNC security wasn't as great as it could have been. But, you know, everyone is, even better companies or organizations have been hacked before. So I think we're, you know, the question, are we all vulnerable, is a natural question to ask. And the easy answer is yes. The more complicated answer is, it depends how interesting you are and how, and who's your, you know, who's after you, right? I mean, if you're the DNC, you're a target because, you know, you're a target of espionage. I mean, you know, the fact that Russia targeted the DNC shouldn't surprise us. I mean, that's Russian intelligence. That's their job, right? That's what they should be doing. And that's what American spies do. That's what British spies do. So I think their security in this case wasn't as good as it could have been. And and we're seeing what, you know, the results of that.
You at one point in your piece, you talk about you use the term zero-day exploit. Is that a kind of tool that you go into a website with in order to hack it?
Yes, sort of. A zero-day exploit is basically, let's say, a method that nobody knows about to break into something. So think about it as like a secret way to pick a lock that no one is aware of, even the lock picker, even the lock maker. So, and that's, you know, that's sort of the perfect hacking tool, because no one knows that it even exists. So you can use it against any kind of lock. I don't know, actually, nobody knows if this was how this hack went down. I think those details are still not public.
Right. So at what point does Guccifer start to raise his hand and say, it's me, I did it, I'm taking credit for this?
Yeah, that was, I think, a really important element of the story. Like, Guccifer 2.0 came out almost like around like 24 hours after the Washington Post and the DNC publicly came out and revealed that they had been breached. And the timeline is important because it seemed to indicate, at least to, you know, a lot of experts that know about Russian foreign intelligence and cyber espionage, that seemed to indicate that it was sort of an attempt by the actual hackers to deflect blame, or at least to launch a sort of the misinformation or confusion campaign, like a, you know.
Exactly, like any kind of diversionary tactic.
Yeah.
Does WikiLeaks get involved in this at the invitation of Guccifer, or is there an independent way that they come to this party?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that are still unanswered regarding WikiLeaks' role in this whole story. But pretty early on, Guccifer 2, when he came out, he started like leaking documents himself. And that was the way that people sort of corroborated that he was indeed, you know, a person that was involved in the initial hack. And he also said, I have more stuff and I will release it later, but I also sent it to WikiLeaks. So he was the one that first mentioned WikiLeaks. And at that point, WikiLeaks did not say anything. And, you know, some reporters asked about, you know, are you guys in touch with this person, with this individual? But they didn't answer, which is pretty much standard for them. Like, they don't discuss sources and methods. And as we all saw, like, last week, finally, after, you know, weeks of waiting, essentially, they came out and released 20,000-something emails.
Right.
And but again, as they usually do, they did not discuss who the source was. But Guccifer, to himself, publicly on Twitter, said, yes, I am the person gave the emails to WikiLeaks.
Some of the emails are embarrassing, but some of them contain really confidential proprietary information. Do you think that the Guccifer or WikiLeaks knew the full content of what they were releasing, or does WikiLeaks simply release whatever was on the encrypted file?
Yeah, that's hard to tell. You know, it's hard to say if they bothered to go through the files and read all the emails.
After you became so prominently involved in the story, was WikiLeaks willing to speak with you then, or
WikiLeaks has never answered to any of our requests for comment in the last few days or weeks.
I understand that the file that went to WikiLeaks was called insurance. That sounds like a, you know, Barbara Stanwyck double indemnity kind of very scary, like insurance for what? Do you have a theory about what that word means or why it would be called that?
Yeah, this is just to sum it up quickly. Basically, a couple of weeks ago, WikiLeaks tweeted out a link to this insurance file, as you say. And I think that's actually pretty standard practice. I think WikiLeaks has done it before, at least once before. Essentially, they put out a file without saying what it is, and it's encrypted, so no one can actually read it without a password, essentially. And that's their way to say, we have something valuable. If something bad happens to us in the next few days, we'll release it, and we'll tell everyone. So it's sort of like, I don't want to call it a ransom, but it's sort of like a way to say, you know, something is coming, and, you know, if something weird happens to us, it wasn't, you know why. And everyone sort of presumes that that file is what Kuchifer 2 gave them.
Well, is there any sense, do you think, that WikiLeaks, by doing the thing, this thing, like, you know, we're releasing it, we've put this encrypted thing out, and instead of calling it, a ransom, is there a way you think they're inviting people like the DNC to front up a lot of money? Is there a blackmail component to it? Pay us off and we will not.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think the word ransom is probably the wrong one. It's just a way for them to essentially, you know, it's like when in spy movies you see people really paranoid and they're like, you know, if I turned out dead on Monday by suicide, I'm not suicidal, you know, something like that. It's essentially a way to say, you know, don't trust what happens next, or if something happens, you know why.
The part of the story that strikes me as the most really revelatory is that it's causing a kind of an about face when it comes to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Instead of being a champion for transparency and anti-war activism, it's now possible that they are helping foreign governments who they're doing the bidding of Russian governments in a way that could help and muck up our political system. That feels very different than wanting there to be transparency about wars in foreign lands. Do you think media outlets should ever reconsider publishing these things that are released, or do you think does the newsworthiness just trump all of that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's a judgment call. It depends on the story. It depends on the data and the documents. I think that, as you said, if it's newsworthy, it's the word itself, right? It's worth reporting and it's worth telling the news. In this case, it appears that some, you know, as you said, some emails were newsworthy and some, and probably, you know, deserve to be known somehow, or the story behind them deserved to be known. But the dumping of the, indiscriminately dumping all the data might have been maybe crossing the line.
We first have known about WikiLeaks only fairly recently with the Manning leaks, but I understand that they've been around for much longer than that. Are you knowledgeable about their origin story?
Yeah, a little bit. They've been around, I guess at this point, maybe 10 years or slightly less than 10 years. Their big break was basically around the Manning disclosures, the Chelsea Manning disclosures, when they got the famous video from Iraq, which they called collateral murder. And then all the secret files from the Iraq and Afghanistan war.
Right. When you looked at the documents that were leaked in this latest go-round, have you and your team made your way through most of them?
We haven't looked too much into the documents ourselves. We're mostly focused on the like tech and basically the cyber side of the story.
The cyber side of the story. Mm-hmm. Did you have any... Does Vice have any feeling about about wariness? You and your not Vice, because you can't speak for Vice, but you and your team at Motherboard, do you have any feeling about inadvertently tipping an election one way or the other? Are you folks frightened about that, or is the story just so juicy at this point that there's simply no turning back from it?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it, but I think that a misconception in this whole story, at least how it's been covered in some media, to be honest, it's not only the media's fault. That's how they're trying to spin it from the both political sides. I think that it's hard to tell, and I'm not really convinced that this was done to, you know, elect Donald Trump or favor the Republican Party. I think that's that's taking a leap. The fact that Russia is interested in hacking political organizations is not surprising and doesn't necessarily mean that they have a horse in this race. I think it's much more likely that if it really was Russia, they were just doing, first of all, their job as, you know, spies, and also the following leaking of information, that's more unusual and almost unique in history if it was really done by their intelligence services. But that by itself doesn't really indicate a preference for any of the candidates. It's most likely just, you know, trying to confuse, trying to deceive and disinform the public.
Do you think that you and your editors ever nervous that this hacker, and once inflamed by you, would turn against you and your organization? Was there ever a fear about harm coming your way?
No, but I think it's because we're kind of used to dealing with people like that, and we take our precautions, and I think we're ready for it.
Let's leave it there. I have been speaking with a very interesting journalist about the DNC hacks. He is Motherboard staff writer Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri. Lorenzo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.